not much.
I think I just have like a really vindictive love for that parable.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day Sermon, the podcast that will then come out 6 months after Valentine's Day.
No, I'm going to turn it around. I'm going to have it out on Friday, before Friday.
Okay.
But that means we have to be, like, tight, so I don't have to do a lot of editing. All
right. We will be tight.
So, all right. Welcome to Tear Gas and Gumdrops, a podcast What's that?
Knowing that we're trying to do it with, like as clean as possible just makes me cranky, so. Okay.
Get that out of your system. Welcome to are you ready?
Ready.
All right. Welcome to Tear Gas and Gumdrops, the podcast about the pain and sweetness of ministry and mission. My name is Chris Morton, coming to you from Austin, Texas.
My name is Kyle Sapp. I'm coming to you from Antioch, California.
And this is a special extra bonus Valentine's edition of the podcast. This is going to be the first time that we've released one generally near the date that we recorded it. So like there will be no like awkward and anachronistic 6 month old references, hopefully, in this one.
I was listening to the one we just released and I was like, why are we talking about Robin Williams? Because he like literally had just died when we recorded that. Yeah.
So Kyle, I have a question for you.
Okay, what's up?
What is the worst date that you've ever been on?
The worst date that I've ever been on happened my freshman year at Harding.
Okay. That was our undergraduate school for listeners.
Our undergraduate alma mater.
Alma mater.
It was sometime in the fall.
Okay.
Pretty early in the school year.
Okay.
Pre-September 11, even.
Oh, yeah.
And I was in my room, and my roommate got this call from this girl that he knew, and I was like, well, is she cute? And he's like, yeah, she's pretty cute. And I was like, well, she want to go out with me? And, like, I took the phone from him, asked her out on a date, and she said
like,
yes.
Like, sight unseen.
Yeah, like, the epitome of the phrase blind date.
Awesome. Except that you set yourself up on it.
Yeah. it's like eHarmony before eHarmony existed.
Right.
So, not to bash eHarmony or anything.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
So we went out. Okay. And we went to dinner, and then we went to a movie.
Okay.
And absolutely nothing about this date was redeeming. she was a nice enough person, but she was very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I could get three words out of her.
Oh, that's the worst feeling.
I didn't have a lot of money, so we went to the student center for dinner.
Yes.
And DCB. So that already just...
It was a declining balance, I believe.
Yeah. So then we were going to go see... The movie playing that night was Atlantis, which is the absolute worst Disney cartoon ever. Mm. I mean, it's boring.
They don't even talk about it. I don't think it's at Disneyland.
I think they wish it had never existed. It's like that Treasure Island in space one. So, but the thing that I remember most about it is one of my friends, I don't know if you ever knew him, and I cannot remember his name.
Super
but
close.
But I remember his face, and we used to hang out a lot freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
He comes walking by, and he starts talking to me. He's like, oh, hey, you're on a date. And I was like, oh, yeah, no big deal. Hey, you want to go with us to the movie? And, like, I brought along a friend making my date the third wheel.
Right. You're like, I need a date. I need a third wheel on this date. It's so bad.
And then the movie ended, and I looked at her. I was like, all right, that was cool. Have a good night. And I left with my buddy. Like, I didn't even walk her home.
Mm-hmm.
It was a horrible experience. probably for her as well. I don't even remember her name.
Okay, so I don't know this gal.
No, I don't even know this gal anymore. I realized, like, as I was thinking about this a few years later, what made that date so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true probably, at least for me, is I was less interested. I, in fact, was not interested in her. I was interested in just having a date.
Right, Right.
And that already started the date off on the wrong foot, because I wasn't interested in seeing her as a person. Right. She was almost a commodity, if you will. Yeah. Something to be earned, a notch on the belt. Not that I was like notching, not that I mean it like that, but
right.
Just, hey, I had a date with a girl. Booyah. Yeah.
Right. Right.
And she was the least interesting person I had ever met. And it's not like I probably wasn't the most interesting person she ever met, just across the board.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I have no patience for people who are like, don't say that about people. You just don't know them. I'm like, you weren't on the date. You don't know how bad it was.
Yeah, it was a nightmare all around. So, I want to say my friend's name was Russell Keck.
Russell Keck. Well, Russell, if you're listening to this, thank you. Thank you for slowing the awkwardness.
Of Kyle's worst. I think that was his name. I don't know.
Like, Facebook doesn't know.
Yeah, it was.
Yay, I think, Russell.
Well, yep, that's
vague Russell. Memories okay. of a Russell Keck. Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, he's a cool guy.
Thanks, Russ.
Thanks, Russ.
Man, I have so many, which I won't go into, because, like, you know, for the last 10 years or so, I've been, like, forcing myself out there to learn how to date and talk to girls, because it comes so unnaturally to me. There was the girl who spent all of dinner describing, I guess she comes from more of a charismatic church tradition than I do, spent dinner telling me how she traveled Eastern Europe and saw dragons. Like, that's how God told her about spiritual warfare, was that, like, dragons would appear. That was weird. But, yeah. My favorite, though, was this girl that I went out with. And, like, I did it right. I took her on a really good dinner, and then we went dancing. And then I'm dropping her off, okay? Here's the scene. Dropping her off, I walk her to the door. She's got her keys in her hand. She's putting her key in the door. And I say, you know, I'd love to see you again sometime. And all I hear her say is that, like, through the teeth inhale noise.
Yeah.
That was all her reaction. I'd love to see you again.
I think I know that person.
Oh, man.
Let's not say that person's name.
Yeah.
Let's just assume I know that person, because I think I remember you telling me the story.
We are doing this episode, special Valentine's episode. I got the idea for it because I am 32 years old. I'm unmarried. I have been either on staff with churches or heavily involved in different ways. And I've seen a lot of good and not so good ways that the church has interacted with singles. It generally, for me, I feel like in my life and life of a lot of others, it's just felt like a missed opportunity, because from my opinion, it felt like churches didn't know what to do with singles. I wrote a blog post, which we will link to in the show notes, a couple of years ago on Valentine's, 7 things singles need from the church. But I just wanted to kind of discuss this opportunity, really, that I see in the struggles that churches have with it, with what to do and how to interact with singles. Kyle, you have a similar but kind of unique experience. Tell us about your experience as being a single guy on staff at a church.
Well, I was a single youth minister for 3 years here before I got married to Aaron. And it wasn't that bad of an experience, to be honest with you. It's weird being a youth minister, not having any experience raising kids on your own. But you just do your best to try to minister to parents, and you're like, yep, I got no clue what it's like, but
yeah.
I've read a book about it. It was fun because at the time, at least, there were people my age who were also all single. And so we would hang out, not all the time, but on a fairly regular basis. So, I didn't feel alone. And there wasn't a program for it. It was kind of organic.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm just as comfortable being with people as I am just being at home watching television or playing video games. So, and I played a lot of World of Warcraft back in the day.
Yes, you did.
Yes, I did.
I feel like our relationship would have been stronger over the years if I would have played World of Warcraft with you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. The only thing that was kind of awkward as a single youth minister was Sunday afternoons after church.
Okay.
And everyone is leaving to go to like lunch and you don't have plans.
Right.
And, you know, you want to go to lunch with the family and, but you don't want to just like invite yourself like that. like, you know, and they've said to you, you know, anytime you want to go out to lunch, just, you know, just come on by, but it still feels a little awkward. Like you're forcing yourself onto that person.
Right.
And you really just want to have someone invite you into their story, I guess, invite you into their life. And they did, but sometimes you want that like direct, immediate invitation. Like, hey, we're going to Mexican place down the street. Want to go with? And you'd be like, yeah, that'd be awesome. Thanks for caring about me. But other than that, I felt okay. And my story is probably a little different because one, churches took a chance on a single minister.
Yeah.
Which is a podcast in and of itself.
Right, right.
That myth of the dangerous single minister.
Right.
And all that jazz. But I was engaged, so I knew I was going to be married and knew I was going to have kids. Like all of that was kind of written in the stars. Like there was no, like at least at the time, I never questioned that from happening.
Right. Yeah, it's almost like you were able to dodge that single minister bullet because you were engaged. Like, I mean, this is going to be really hard for me to talk about without getting super cynical. But yeah, it's almost like there's a box that married people knew what to do with, and you were close enough. Close enough to it. But I do really appreciate what you said about like how totally useless that like that invite was. Like, you know, you're always welcome. Yeah, but nobody wants to invite themselves. I don't care how good a friend you are. You never want to invite yourself. I'll tell you what, because of my experience with exactly what you're talking about, we do weekly Sunday lunch after liturgy at Austin Mustard Seed. We announce it. It's our first announcement every Sunday. Here's where we're going to lunch, because I had years of loneliness that I didn't want a first-time visitor to ever experience.
Let's talk about your post, because there's good stuff.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Well, what stood out from you about that? We'll just hit the highlights, and I'll link back to this in the show notes. We won't hit all seven, but go ahead.
I kind of like the first one and you're right. You can definitely tell you were a little cynical at some points, but your first point about stopping the incessant marriage talk.
Right.
You know, I always think about it from a term of, you know, there are married people who are struggling, and particularly in today's world where marriage is just, it's such a hot button issue. Mm-hmm. For numerous reasons, and divorce and all that jazz. Churches are trying to create space for people to have good, healthy marriages.
Right.
But at the same time, if we talk about it all the time, that does kind of get this, like, kind of leaves the single people out, like, oh yeah, you and your spouse were having another argument, just like you had in last week's episode.
Right.
I can relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wives are silly.
Right. It's so hard being a married person. You know, try sleeping alone on Friday night.
Oh, she keeps taking your covers? Oh, boo-hoo.
Boo-hoo. I have all these covers to myself, but I never wanted them. So I think the first time, I will say I grew up like fairly ignorant of the way that so many churches focus on married people, even though like you look at a lot of churches' structure and there's all of this like Sunday schools or youth groups or all these things that are really aimed at families with kids. And that's so core. And I mean, that's your bread and butter. So I don't want to like say, I don't want to say it's a bad thing, but I will say that like it's huge in our understanding of what church is. I think we talked about this when we talk about like good reasons to leave church. You know, our understanding of what church is in so many cases has been limited to like kind of an extension or support group for the family. And I think the first time I noticed this was when you and I at our alma mater, which we already named, and I don't think this is a secret. I don't think we're defaming our alma mater, but generally Christian Bible colleges and universities have a reputation of being marriage factories. And, you know, there's jokes about getting your MRS degree. And, you know, that comes for a reason. And I noticed it first there because it seemed like, you know, we had daily chapel, and it seemed like every day in chapel that somebody was telling this story about how they met their significant other at church or at the Christian university. We had special courses that were just for that, you know, and there was what's that?
There was the opening line on freshman orientation where there was like, look to your left or to your right.
Right.
Specifically, you might marry one of those people. I did. Like every year I heard that was the opening line.
Right, right. So, but yeah, I don't want to limit this to just that university experience, you know. Yeah, since then, so probably my biggest experience with it was when I worked with a large church in Texas here, a mega church here in Texas. And that's just all we had. We had married families, and then we had the kids. And there literally was a gap between about 28 and 35. I was the only person, you know, I think I was like 24, 25 at the time. And I was one of maybe two or three people in this rather large church within that gap. And there just wasn't a place. There wasn't things for them to do. And, you know, so it also just comes out, you know, it comes out when all of your, like you were saying, your sermon illustrations are always something about a fight you had with your wife and how you're learning to forgive her, or, you know, or a cute thing that your kids did. And I actually, when I was getting ready to preach here a few years ago, and my roommate at the time saw me prepping, and he said, "Chris, do you like ever feel jealous of other people that they have all of these sermon illustrations about their families?" And I exploded. It brought out a level of anger in me that I surprised myself. And I said a string of words that I won't repeat on air. I said, no, because that's not the church. The church is not just married people. And if the language that we use is always about married people, then we are de facto making it really hard for non-married people to be a part of it. So I just, like, I take it as a personal challenge every week to, if I need an illustration when I'm speaking, to find illustrations in movies and sports and books and politics, and in real world experience. And I kind of pride myself on that, of like being able to talk in a way that anybody that walks in, whether they're, you know, married or not, is able to hear it. What's hard though is like, I feel like some people will hear what we're talking about here and think that we're that Chris is anti-family or anti-marriage. I actually have been accused of that before, which I don't know what anti-family means. I don't think that's really a thing, but I've been accused of it before. And I just think, like, no, like, the kingdom of God, the people of God are family, but not in any sense that has been, you know, defined by culture. We're redefining what family is. And so, man, I want to talk about family and I want to talk about marriage, but I don't want to talk about it as in a way that makes it sound like some sort of end all of the Christian life is to have a happy marriage. And yeah. And I think that we do it partly from bad theology and partly from a lack of creativity. And that may be judgmental, but that's been my experience. What do you I'm sorry. What do you think about it?
Bad theology and lack of creativity. Those are scathing indictments, good sir. Let's say maybe. Let's also say that for the most part, people tend to be focused on their reality.
Right.
So it's not a lack of bad theology. It's not a lack of it's not a lack of creativity. It's just people speak from their reality. And most preachers are married. And most ministers are married. And that's a whole other thing. But you mentioned, you talk about, you know, family and not being anti-family, like in your post. And I like this, that you brought out two elements of being our families, of inviting singles in, which there's got to be a way of doing that with at least acknowledging that there might be some awkwardness in that, but being okay with that, because let's be honest, there's awkwardness when our natural families get together anyway, right? And that's okay. So, but let's talk a little bit more. Can you say be our families is point three, and then your 2 points later, you say help us build community. So
yeah,
what do you, those seem to be kind of two ideas that are kind of the same thing in some ways. So how do you see those kind of working out, I guess?
Yeah.
What does Box do?
Okay. So be our families and, you know, bring us into your families. Like I do see it's kind of different. So I can only talk about like my experience. Like I, more than once have had people literally let me live with them, and bring them in. And I've gotten to see, what that is like. You know, I love my family, but I have come to think, and maybe you've experienced this too, that no matter how good or bad your family is, you need more experiences of family if you're going to build your own. You need other experiences. And so I've been really blessed by people who literally, like, let me sleep on their floor and told me how their marriage was going and told me the play-by-play of the fights they had with their kids. And, man, that just like there's a family here in Austin who put me in their Christmas card 1 year because I was living with them. They just mean,
I'm going to forever put you in my Christmas.
Yeah, I was in their Christmas card that year, and she's like, you know, this was the year that Chris was part of our family, and that was a really, really amazing thing. And again, I think that there's like maybe some out there that. That might say, oh man, you know, you don't know, like, what if he's a creeper, you know, and that didn't occur to them. So that's one thing, is just bringing us in on their experience of on the experience of family and helping us learn that. But on a more practical, just like being family to us, you know, so as Jesus said, you know, we'll have fathers and brothers and mothers and sisters, you know, when we chase after the kingdom of God. And we as a church need to not assume that's just going to happen. Like, we need to be looking for opportunities to create those family dinners, to create those fatherly or motherly relationships, brothers and sisters. Like, we use the terms brothers and sisters a lot, but do we get to do brother and sister stuff, you know? And I think you asked, you know, what some of my church experience has been. I was just at a wedding this weekend with, and there was this couple that visited. I hadn't seen them for a while, but they'll like forever be close to my heart because they did a once a week potluck on their back porch. You know, in Austin, most nights it's going to be 70, 80 degrees. And we would sit on their back porch from, you know, 6 p.m. to 1 p.m. on a 1 a.m. on a Tuesday and just shoot the breeze and share meals and really get to know each other. And this couple hosted that, and the reason they could host that is because they had this giant house. There were two married couples, a pair of, singles, and a baby all living in this house. And they just thought the more the merrier. So they already had this great family situation and they invited more people into it. And when you're living that way, you're rubbing up against each other. You're finding what's great about, like, the gifts that you have to bring. You're finding what you suck at and how you hurt other people in a way that you can't do when you live on your own. And it's a really beautiful thing. There have been different seasons where that church and another church I know here in town have actually owned houses to help single people live together like that. I don't think it needs to be that extreme, although I love that. And if someone knows how to fund that, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you about creating better living situations that deal with that kind of stuff. But yeah, just creating situations to really be family. And what that means, I mean, here's the fact of the matter. That means we're going to have to see each other more than just Sundays. Means we're going to have to see each other more than just our small groups or midweek groups that you have. It means that we're just going to have incidental interactions and be around each other a lot. And that when we do that, we don't have to do anything flashy. We don't always, sometimes it needs to be structured, but it doesn't always need to be structured. And it needs to just be a chance that, that we can feel safe and be ourselves and do fun things together. And we need to, we need to teach people how to do that because, you know, there are people who can party, but that doesn't mean they know how to be family. And there are people, in my case, who didn't know how to party or be family. So, yeah, so we need that. We need, you know, so our church, Austin Mustard Seed, one of the things we do is about three times a year we do an event called Dinner for Six, where we mix everybody up in dinner parties for six. And that's it. That's all of it. Like, you sign up, you're paired with five other people. I go out of the way to make sure that they're people that you're not connected to. And just our hope is that we're going to kind of kickstart those relationships. And I hear stories, you know, I hear stories about people. There was a family that had just moved to Austin and they didn't have anywhere to go for Thanksgiving. And another family invited them to go to Tennessee with their family. Oh, I travel across the country. Just like, oh, you can't go home. Well, come with us. That's a pretty big invite, you know. Things like that. We just got to be creative. We got to be creative.
Yeah, you know, and I, one thing that I really, really appreciated about Mustard Seed when I was there, is the lunch that you mentioned. Like, I was reflecting on that later. That we were sitting at a table eating lunch, and to my right was like this music student, I think, and across from him, to your left, was an elementary school teacher who both of them may be close to the same age. I'm not entirely sure. And then beside me was a neuroscientist, that lady whose name I cannot remember, but I really enjoyed talking with her. And just how, like, that was kingdom for me, that we were all at different stages in our lives, doing different things even, but none of that mattered. And we were all there having good conversations.
Yeah, and good lunch.
and decently good lunch, yes. You mentioned theology. And maybe a bad, maybe we do have a tendency for bad theology, or maybe we just kind of forget about this. But Paul talks about not getting married so that you can be more devoted to the kingdom. And you know, I was thinking about that with your concept about giving singles a mission.
Yeah.
Like, there's a there's an entire, for lack of a better phrase, untapped market right there of people who are still kind of developing themselves, within their 20s, or even people who are older who have the time to be invested in the church. Like, this is one of the things I think is killing America church, is that we don't have time to be together anymore.
Yeah. Well,
single people seem to have lots of time.
Yeah.
One of my good friends, in fact, is a single youth minister. He's older than 40, I think, and he's in North Carolina, and he has boundaries, and he's very healthy with it, but he also kind of has that freedom to talk to kids, you know, late nights, because he doesn't have to be home to a family, and he's not missing family dinner when some kind of tragedy happens. Like, he doesn't. I think ministers should have boundaries. And I think ministers should prioritize their family in some way. And that's something that he doesn't have to deal with, is not the right word, because I don't consider it dealing with my wife. but he's not
Aaron.
Yeah. Love you, Aaron. You're my favorite wife. You're way better than weekend wife.
Kyle doesn't have a weekend wife.
No, weekend wife is a joke. I tell her she's my favorite wife, and she's like, "You have another one?" Like, yeah, weekend wife. Pretty cool. But I don't. I'm happily married to one lady, and we have a beautiful son.
Yeah, I mean, we can go into that whole thing, but I do think that because we don't really reflect on... I mean, Jesus didn't have much nice to say about family. Now, I don't think that doesn't mean that family isn't important. I just think that if we're not careful, that our own love for our family and our own experience being married, you know, for people who are married, is going to read back. We use that as our hermeneutic to read scripture. And that's not necessarily what Scripture is about. I think that Genesis is our archetype, and Paul and Jesus are our example. Okay, so it is true that man is not meant to be alone. That's what it means that Genesis is our archetype. That is what it's part of being human. Man was not meant to be alone. And part of the story of Jesus and Paul in that is that there are different ways of being human, and there are some things that there are some approaches to mission that overcome the archetype. But you should never feel bad about the archetype. You know, you should never feel bad about wanting to be in a relationship. And if you're going to not, I would go as far as saying this: if you're going to not be in a relationship, you should feel called to it the way that Jesus and Paul did. Otherwise, you know, you're going to experience loneliness. That's what the archetype tells us, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good way of looking at it. That strikes me as kind of a focus on vocation.
Yeah.
And sometimes I worry that our focus on the family, I'm not saying that to like passive aggressively say something about that ministry, but they don't get, I'm sorry, they use such a catchy phrase or common phrase.
Right.
Sometimes I feel like our focus on the family can just be another subtle way of focusing on individualism and own little shallow world.
Yeah.
Selves, because we take pride in our families.
Yeah.
And we invest in our families. And having a successful family, at least for much of American history, if not still going on, having a successful family is a marker of pride for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And not to say that we should have bad families. I hope to have a good family, but I don't want to do that at the exclusion of my call to the kingdom of God.
Right. Right.
The last one I think that would really be good to talk about is this idea of chastity.
Okay.
I think I like what you say here. The Christian verse, where is it? It's often been remarked that the only new virtue Christianity brought into the world is chastity. There's nothing more normal than human beings having lots of sex. The Christian virtue of chastity, of devoting the energy to the kingdom of God, is something unique and countercultural. Rather than making singles feel guilty about their sexuality, chastity and the hard work that comes with it should be treated with the same value as marriage. So help me understand what do you mean by that, and how do you promote chastity and value chastity without turning it into like forever waits or just a massive group about people who
Right. Yeah, okay. So that right there is the key, is like chastity is not the same thing as not having sex.
Uh-oh.
Chastity is not, I'll just say it again. Chastity is not the same thing as not having sex. It's not the same thing as abstinence. Abstinence is the avoiding. And so the action is the same, but the purpose is different. Chastity is a chosen way of life for a purpose. But what does that mean? I don't know, because the Protestant church has not put effort into developing this. So we have 500 years of not knowing how to be chaste. So I don't know what that looks like. I'll tell you two things that shaped my thinking on this. One was a comment. I wish I could find a citation. Maybe a listener can find a citation for this. But I remember Tim Keller talking about this in a sermon that the idea of chastity is absolutely impossible outside of super close, tight-knit, intimate community. So if you're not in a marriage, you still, back to the archetype, you still have that need to connect. And if you aren't getting that sense of connection from a super tight-knit community around you, then you're going to seek that connection out in relationships by having sex with lots of people or one person that you're not married to, or you're going to seek out a thrill that replaces that need for connection. And so Keller's point was, if you're going to remain unmarried, you have to throw yourself into community. This is something I really loved how Rob Bell talks about it in his book, Sex God. And he talks about just the idea of sex is, even the word. He goes in the entomology. I always get entomology and etymology confused, so I'm not talking about bugs, I'm talking about words. But he talks about, like, the word itself is about connection. And so the goal then of sexuality is not just simply, you know, reproduction or the thrill of the event, but it is that sense of connection, and that we find that sense of connection in intercourse, but not only in intercourse. And so, you know, by saying, you know, teach us how to be chaste, I actually, you know, got some feedback. We'll talk about the feedback that we got here in a minute, but I got some feedback about that. Like, we don't need to be told anymore to not have sex. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we need help learning how to be whole, complete human beings that can live in community, whether we are married or not. And if we are not married, then we get the opportunity to have that experience with a whole lot of other people. Than a married person will.
The community, by the way,
right.
Not the.
Just
to clarify.
Yeah.
Your word usage there.
Thank you. My etymology, entomology, whichever it is.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Ontological church.
Ontological church. Yeah. Does that make more sense?
Yeah. No. I really like that. I think there's some good stuff there.
I want to figure it out, man. I want to figure it out.
You and every other singles ministry minister.
Well, I'll throw this out here, and here's part of why I think this is so important. People freak out about how millennials are leaving the church. Now, I don't want to be that guy who says causation equals correlation, but millennials are also not getting married. And if the church has always been catering to married people and millennials are not going to church, maybe they're not going to church because it's just for married people. I know that's really bad science. I know that causation does not equal correlation, but it's something we need to think about. I threw this out there on Facebook, and I want to just listen to a few people who replied to this. I think it's really good stuff from my buddy, former roommate. He and I were single and roommates for a long time, named Daniel Clark. And he says, I think involving singles in the structure and plan of the church can also serve the purpose of helping the younger lot bridge the gap between college kid consumerism and move towards an adult capable of contributing to a church community. I think teach us to give should be added to your list. Maybe, maybe before we even pluck out singles and send them on missions, they probably need to learn how to play a role, offer their talents to others, and maybe even, I know this sounds crazy, give some of their monetary resources. So thank you, Daniel, for that. My current roommate, Trevor McCurry, he's in the room next to me right now. He said that singles are the new lepers. Thank you, Trevor. Brittany Callender says, I've been secretly married this whole time, so that wasn't very helpful, but thank you, Brittany.
I laughed at that.
Jen McClung, my sweet cousin, Jen. She says, here are my 2 cents. First, there is no way that you can understand how devastated I am to still be single because you once had a high school relationship end. Do not compare being single as a teenager or a college person to being a single adult. They are not the same thing. And then here's her second thing, and I love that she said this. Please set us up. Yes, we would love to meet your neighbor, cousin, coworker, brother, friend. Third, the most emotionally difficult thing for me is that as soon as people at church introduce themselves, they ask, are you married? Do you have kids? And then I say no, and then they awkwardly look for someone else to talk to. So yeah, thank you, Jen. We need to learn to talk about things other than our kids if we're going to have single people in the church. Jason Carrion, good friend, part of Awesome Mustard Seed, he says, the point that most resonated with him was be our families and help build community. And then Jason said something really important. I'll be interested to hear what you think of this, Kyle. He says, while the focus of the article is on singles, The truth is that many people are missing community regardless of their marriage status. I grew up in a family that was lonely, as true community and connection was not really possible. I've run across a few marriages that are cold and lacking in connection. For churches to have a bias, whether intentional or not, toward marriage or singles, I think puts the community out of balance in a way that isolates the very thing they should be working towards. Real community is holistic, encompasses every stage of life.
Have you seen... I really like that.
Yeah, yeah. So
I really like that.
Right. Let's talk about how to be good community. Let's talk about how to be healthy human beings, whether we're married or not.
Why don't we make that an entirely separate
podcast? Yeah, maybe we'll bring Jason on because he's done some really hard internal work on that, and I've got a lot to learn from him. And then I'll just say to my dear friend Anne Holland, she wrote a post longer than my blog post in response to this, and like went point by point, kind of counterpointing, or some things she disagreed with. I said it's more than we can handle in this, so we'll link to that in the show.
It's probably one of the biggest responses we've gotten. So apparently, you touched on an issue with this idea.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like anyone came across like overly cynical.
That's
you know,
good.
No one said we need to do like Galentine's night, although. You know, maybe Parks and Rec was onto something.
That's a thing. All right, so you want to do the close here? Just ask me about like ways that people can help and all. People can contact us and people can help get the word out.
Okay, so how are we trying to get the word out and trying to get contacted to get more people listening to our awesome podcast about tear gassy drops of gums?
Yeah. Well, okay, so first off, Kyle, if somebody wanted to contact us, they could like us on Facebook. Just search for Tear Gas and Gumdrops and like us and shoot us a message there.
We're the first one that comes up on our Tear Gas and Gumdrops, not the second.
That is the truth. The second is that they can drop us a line on or by subscribing to our email newsletter, which you can find at teargasandgumdrops.com. But you know what the biggest thing we need, Kyle, is? Do you know?
No. What do we need?
The biggest thing we need is help on iTunes. We need people to go on iTunes and like us. And we need people to go on there. Or not like us. Subscribe to us and leave us reviews. You know, they don't have to be 5-star reviews. But, you know, of course that helps. And what that does is it encourages people to get the word out. It pumped us up in iTunes rankings and people are more likely to see us there. I want to say thank you to our good friend Paul Cartwright, who had a birthday this week.
Happy birthday, Paul.
I want to say thank you to Terry Ishii. Terry's a missionary here in Austin and a good big supporter of Austin Mustard Seed, and as well as a guy that went by the handle of Law and Psych. All three of them gave us 5-star reviews on iTunes.
All of the people who commented on the question.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Finally, I want to say sorry to James Holston. He tried to beep in here, but we just didn't have time to get everybody. Maybe we'll do a 3-way follow-up call with James at some point where we can talk about this. Anyway, Kyle, what are you going to do for Valentine's Day?
Well, we're painting the youth room on Saturday, and then my wife and I are going to dinner.
Nice.
That night.
Nice.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, I think my lady friend, I just let her know that Valentine's scares the crap out of me, and so we plan together, and that makes me feel really good. So we've got some plans. I think involve fried chicken and movies.
Best day ever.
Perhaps. I hope so. Yeah. All right. Well, Kyle, thanks for doing this last minute special edition of Tear Gas and Gumdrops. This is where we sign off.
All right.
Signing off.
All right.
So, go invite a single person to lunch on Sunday. Please.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was your sign off.
That's my sign off. That's all I got.